All right. Well, my name is Athena Dean Holtz, and I'm the publisher at Redemption Press. This class is on From Sermon to Book, What's It Take? But just to give you a little background, 1986, heard the gospel for the first time when I was 33, and it, within 6 months was in full-time ministry, not a good idea, working with Vietnam veterans and their family members. Point Man Ministries, I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but that's, I was part of that ministry when it started, and the executive director wrote a book on post-traumatic stress and then his salvation in the end of it. And we had all these groups in churches all across the country wanting something other than VA material that basically says, you know, learn to cope with it, you're stuck with it, you know, take meds. I mean, that was their answer, the Veterans Administration. And so we had, we're going from a Christian perspective and support each other, pray for each other, and watch God do cool stuff. And so that book, when we sent in, we sent it to all sorts of publishers, on lots of New York publishers, but because the author was not famous and it was not, you know, some great big huge ministry, nobody was interested. We even had one rejection letter that said, oh, Vietnam veterans don't read. Oh. So we're not, like, excuse me? I don't know what that guy's problem was. But the point was, we weren't a big enough deal for a publisher to want to take a risk. And so we ended up having someone who was in the publications division of the General Baptist Convention. He said, look, this manuscript needs work, needs a rewrite. I'm willing to rewrite it, get a cover designed, get an ISBN number, get it laid out, print you 10,000 copies for a buck a piece, and you'll have product that you can give as a resource for all these groups across the country. So it was like, absolutely, that's what we need to do. We didn't know where we were going to get the money. It was like, that was probably the demographic we were working with was not, you know, they didn't have lots of money. So it was a very poor ministry. And like, I don't know, within 2 weeks, a guy walked in the office. We didn't know who he was. He's a Korean, from Korea, veteran from the Vietnam conflict. And he came in and said, I heard what you're doing, and I'd like to help you with that, and wrote a check for the whole thing. So it was like, there's a handout right there on the back chair. So it was a total God thing. We went through 10,000 copies in 2 years. We gave away probably 2,000 of them, sold 8,000 of them. We were in the green room ready to be on the 700 Club and met this guy who said, you know, I could sell this to a publisher. You have a track record. And so that's what he did. He went and met with the senior editor from, was I supposed to turn that on? Okay, good. He met with the senior editor at Multnomah, what was at the time Multnomah Publishers, and the guy said, okay, I'll take a look at it, read it on the plane ride back. Just so happened his brother was a Vietnam vet. So it was, you know, another God thing. And so they published it for 8 years, sold another 40,000 copies. And at the time when we did our first 10,000, we had no distribution to bookstores, no, it was just, they were our product, and we sent them out through the ministry. So that gave us a whole level of exposure, gave the ministry another level of exposure that we never would have had. So the first printing gave us a lot of exposure, and it was advertising for the ministry. It told the ministry's story, really. And then when it got hit the bookstores and went that level, it was a whole another level of exposure, which was way cool. So that was how I ended up getting into publishing in the first place. And we co-founded Wine Press Publishing, which I don't know if any of you heard of it, but that was a God idea that the enemy hijacked. And long story, I don't need to get into it now, but they're no longer. And so I was asked to basically come back to Washington and form a company to help a lot of the authors that kind of got displaced from that situation. So that's my background. So I started Redemption Press a little over a year ago. I'm back in my old offices that were mine originally. And so that's a whole crazy God story that's way cool. So, but we have lots of times pastors and ministry leaders that come to us and say, I have this, you know, I have this sermon series, and it's really the passion of my heart, and I really want to do more with it. I want to see it do more. And I don't know if any of you have ever picked up a book and opened it up and started reading it, and you could tell that it was a transcript, word for word, from a sermon just printed in a book. Do you know what I mean? The written word and the spoken word, two completely different things. So that's what we're going to go over, some of those things. And I'm sorry, I don't have a lots of stuff on the wall, but I'm just going to have to do it this way. So first, I guess my question is, why would you want to get a message into print? Inflate your ego, see your name on a book, make a name for yourself? Probably not. Hopefully not. Or leave a legacy, show the faithfulness of God, you know, make his name great, prove his faithfulness, or maybe pass on particular insights that God has done with you that needs to go farther than just where you've been able to share it. Now, there's some other benefits of being in print, and I just want to kind of go down a bullet list. It's really a new point of connection with your congregation, with potential members, with people that, if you're a speaker, the people in the audience. I mean, so it takes you to a different level, being able to leave them more. I mean, you can't say everything that's in a book in half an hour or 45 minutes, whatever you're, you know, the time that you're either in the pulpit or speaking. Reaching past the four walls of your church. Telling the story of your ministry, just like The Point Man, the non-vet book, that's what that did. It opens up new doors for the message God has given you. Because when you have a book in print, all of a sudden, I mean, it's the craziest thing, because now anybody can print a stinking book. You know, I mean, you can go online and you can go boom, and you're... But having a book in print really does. People that could never fathom writing something down and actually going through that whole process, it's like amazing to them. And it does open up, I mean, if it's done right, it will open up new doors, because it does give you a level of credibility. And, you know, a lot of times people will want to take something, a pastor's maybe with something they've taught on, or a speaker with a particular area they've have done seminars on, and maybe go deeper, maybe do something from that for small groups. So really taking a topic and going deeper is another benefit that you can utilize being in print. And when I say being in print, I don't just mean a hard copy. I mean ebooks too. So either one of those applies. So any other reasons you guys can think of that I didn't cover? Very good. Very good. Yep. Because when God teaches you stuff and you work with people one-on-one to be able to give people what you know so that they can do that same type of ministry, absolutely. That's a good one. Anybody else before I move on? Okay. So why you? Well, we all have a story. Writing a book and getting it down... And either, you know, repurposing content or writing something from scratch, really, people are able to find out what makes you unique when they read that. What is it that only you can say? I mean, I used to go to writers' conferences, and it so bugged me when the topic on the editor's panel would come to, well, what should I write about? Well, what's the trend? Well, what's going to be the next big, you know, thing? Well, how about you write about what God wants you to write about, whatever he's given you a passion for? Because that's what's going to make a difference if it's really something that only you can say the way you can say it. So what has your particular journey taught you? And that's another reason that, I mean, a lot of people just think, oh, it's already been said. Not necessarily. You're going to say it totally different because your story's different. And usually when you're writing something, about a topic or a passion, you're going to use your experience as the supporting kind of, okay, this is how I'm going to prove what I'm saying is true. This is what happened to me, and this is what I went through, and this is a struggle I had. And so it's always going to be unique to you because you're going to use your story as the red thread. What have you gone through that will help others? Find a need and fill it. Of course, I'm not saying just find one and write on anything, but I guess that should be my foundation that we are all clear on, is that if you're going to publish something, it needs to be what God has given you and not just a formula or something that's a bright idea, you know, a good idea. It needs to be a God idea. And you know what? I didn't pray. So if you don't mind, I'm going to take a second because I feel a little scattered not having my PowerPoint. So Lord, thank you for this time and thank you for all the people that are here. Pray that you would, if there's something I'm going to talk about you don't want me to, just wipe it out of my head. And if there's something I'm forgetting that you want me to talk about, pray that you would bring it to mind. Pray that you would give us open hearts and that you would teach us what you want us to learn today. And Lord, put a guard over my mouth. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. Thank you. I feel better. Okay. So I asked my two, we have editors that, one that was my coach way back in the day, I'm going to tell you that story, but one of my coaches and writers is the, she's written 50 books, fiction, nonfiction, Bible studies, devotionals, ghostwriting. She's done ghostwriting, so she's worked with a lot of pastors to help them develop, you know, take their sermon and craft it. Then I have my other editor, coach, who she is more of, oh, let me help you write it, like, from scratch. Let's brainstorm this and figure out what's going to be the best way to do this. And she gave me a story about a pastor that she brainstormed with when he was starting to think about writing a book. And then I looked in the program, and he's here, Don Ross, the turnaround pastor. Yeah, so I'm like, well, that's cool. So basically, he had an experience of going in and starting to help churches make a turnaround. And so he used the principles that helped others do the same thing. And the book actually ended up, it was called The Turnaround Pastor, Pathways to Save, Revive, and Build Your Church. So the book ended up developing into a whole coaching ministry. And now it's gone into its third printing. So, you know, he wasn't really sure what he was going to do when he first started to develop the book idea. And so to have someone who understands writing and editing and crafting a book to brainstorm with you and help you get some direction, I just love that. I think that's the problem with most Christians, if I may say. We think, God gave me this book. He gave me it. I mean, he downloaded it to me, and I got it. And it doesn't need any help. It's perfect. Don't change a word. That isn't all. You know, if we don't know how to write, yes. Well, that's one thing that we do is we have a whole stable of editors that, at least through Redemption Press. Now, there are lots of Christian editors out there. We are very picky and filter them and make sure that they've worked for a lot of the big publishers to make sure they're really good quality. But that is probably the biggest problem with Christian writers. If they don't go to a writer's conference and they don't learn the basics and the craft of writing, then they can end up just publishing something that makes them look foolish because it's not good writing. So having someone help at the beginning stages and even coach you all the way through, I think is just the best thing you can do. But that's not always realistic. Some pastors are way too busy to do that. And they just want to, here, take this content and fix it. That's fine. In fact, I'm going to go over that. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit real quick about, is it self-promotion? I mean, when you publish a book and you start to, you know, get it out there, I know when my first book came out in 96, and it was called Consumed by Success, Reaching the Top and Finding God Wasn't There. And it was my personal public repentance for being involved in multi-level marketing. I used to have ads all over the radio and had all sorts of people that I recruited that I'd go to church and look for people to recruit. I mean, God totally nailed me. And I ended up writing a book about it just to repent, basically. So people either love me or hate me for that book. But when it first came out, it was like, well, I want to call radio stations and say, you need to interview me. But it felt so weird and selfish and self-centered and like self-promotion. And finally, somebody said to me, look, did God give you this message? I mean, is this a story that God used in your life to teach you something that he wants you to share with other people? Yeah. Well, then you're not promoting you. You're promoting the message God gave you. Okay. Total paradigm shift. I mean, that just totally flipped my switch, and it was like, okay, I can do this. But at first, I did feel like a little uneasy about it. Now, and another thing that we struggle with is who would want to read what I write? You know, a lot of pastors feel that way, that it's just a lack of confidence in that anyone would really want to read it. And I've always, whenever I'd go to the, was the Christian Booksellers Association, now it's the International Christian Retail Show. I mean, the first time I ever signed a book, you know, and had a book signing for an hour, I stood there and went, what if nobody shows up? What if nobody wants it? I mean, and I think everybody has that fear. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's the enemy or whatever. But of course, I ended up with a great big long line. But that is, you know, the whole questioning our hearts and is it self-promotion and, you know, the fear of, you know, maybe nobody really wants to read what I write. The question is God speaking through you or not? I mean, if you're in the pulpit or if you're a speaker and you speak on his behalf, my guess is, you know, he is speaking through you. So, you know, kind of if you get that in perspective, then it's like, okay, again, you're promoting him, not you. So the growth of social media and technology has really created some huge opportunities to expand your reach. And It has helped it be a little less, you know, the feel of self-promotion than, you know, knocking on doors and trying to get, you know, the face-to-face trying to get people interested. So the social media helps a little because people can kind of get to know you on your social media platform. And then, you know, so it's not quite the same. I'm not sure that I'm articulating that very well, but and really it's not self-promotion. Getting a book into print, it's not just ego, but it is a new way to fulfill the Great Commission and get more exposure for your ministry. So, okay. So what it isn't, this is what it's not. It's not the transcript of a group of sermons printed in a book, like we talked about earlier. That's not what I'm talking about. It's not one long sermon. It's not a brilliant exegesis of well-known passages. It's not a vanity piece. I mean, that's not the kind of thing that I'm talking about. So there's basically taking sermons or speeches or, you know, retreats or whatever, taking that content and turning it into a book, there's pretty much two routes to go. And those two routes from sermon to book are, well, first of all, they're going to depend on your schedule. They're going to depend on your goals. And they're going to depend on finances. Because the first, if you are too busy, if you are just like a way busy person, I don't have time, then you're going to need a co-writer or a collaborative writer who's going to do the book. It's your content, but they're going to fix it. And they're going to craft it. They're going to kind of rewrite it and make it quality. I mean, it's already quality content, I'm assuming, but taking it and making it, you know, a book that really is going to minister to people and really is going to communicate what you want it to communicate, a good writer is going to be able to do that and retain your voice. But that is more expensive because you're having to pay someone with that ability to... It's almost kind of like a ghostwrite, where a ghostwrite is where somebody a writer is talented enough that they can come in, they can interview you, you tell your story, they audio tape it, they take notes, and then they write the book in your voice. And it sounds like you wrote it. Not everybody can do that. Not every editor that I work with has that gift. That is a total gift. In fact, I got to tell you this story. This is the coolest story. Inmate 46857, Eddie Spencer. This great, I mean, this guy's a 7 foot tall black guy who was a very, I mean, this guy was bad before he got saved in prison. But I met his ghostwriter at a writer's conference at Wheaton Bible College, and she was this little, about 50-ish, white lady that was kind of a southern accent. I mean, so on the different side of the tracks. They lived in the same town in Mississippi on the different sides of the tracks. But how she could take his story and write it in his voice blew my mind. It was like, how did you do that? But she did, and so it is a gift. That is not something that just anybody can do. So if you're too busy, you're able to spend less time, but you have to pay more to get somebody to do that. If you're flexible and you have time, and maybe you want to improve your writing because you maybe have other books you want to write, then coaching you to do the writing is a less expensive way to have a coach work with you, brainstorm your ideas, tell you what to do, you go do it, and then they look at it and go, okay, now you're making this mistake, this is how to fix it, do this. So it's a lot of mentoring, basically what it is, through the whole process of writing a book. Now that's going to be way less, or even rewriting, if you were rewriting content from a sermon, that coach would be able to go over it with you and say, okay, you need to do this, 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 then you go do it. So it takes more time, less expensive, because you're doing the work. Okay? So those are pretty much the two routes that you could take. Now, I'm going to just quick go over four funding things that pastors that I've worked with in the past have utilized to come up with the money for the editor or the coach and then the publishing process. I had one pastor, Ray Hampton, from his church in Seattle. And this was back in the day where you couldn't print one book at a time. Like all of these books up here are, these books were printed and bound in 1 minute. Mm-hmm. It's like totally amazing. The technology has come a long way since I started. When I started, you had to do at least 1,000 copies or more to start with. They didn't have digital on demand, print on demand. But so for 1,000 copies, what we did was we created a pre-publication flyer for him. We created the cover, we put it on the flyer, said this is going to be the price, and then he took that flyer all over the place and pre-sold enough copies to come up with the first half of it, which was like $1,500 or something like that. Yeah, it was way cool, but it was a way for him to be able to get buy-in and get the people that supported him, that wanted to help him get published, to raise the money. Then this I thought was brilliant, and I don't really think this pastor realized what he was doing when he did it. But he was a Vietnam vet, and he had a book called How to Overcome Anger, Bitterness, and Unforgiveness. Well, that's not really the kind of a book that you could necessarily send all your friends and say, you need to read this. You know what I mean? It might offend them. So he sent out a letter to his whole mailing list, which was like 900 people, and said, for every donation of $15 or $12, I forget what the amount was, I will donate a copy to a prison. So he ended up with like $1,700 or $2,000 or something. I don't even remember the amount. But he ended up being able to fund, no, wait a minute, it was like $7,500 was what he got in for that. So he was able to like print a couple thousand copies. But, I mean, talk about an indirect approach. Like, I know you don't need this, but maybe you know someone who does. Or maybe you could give so someone else could benefit from this. So that was way cool. I thought that was and that's not going to work for every book. But, you know, you could, for every gift of X amount, you could give to a Christian school, a library, a shelter. I mean, there's lots of different places that would benefit. It just is going to depend on what your topic is, how that would work. Another pastor from up in Everett, Frank Pena, many years ago, we did soft cover, but then we did a hardcover edition, like 250 hardcovers. And he signed and numbered limited edition, and then he sold, now this was a little different, he sold those for like $100 a piece to raise money for a special project that they had in the church. So that wasn't necessarily to fund it, but I've had other pastors who have done a limited edition like that of hardcover and do the signed and numbered and just charge, you know, extra for those to be able to raise money for the rest of the print run. So that's kind of a cool. And all of these print-on-demand books that are soft cover can be hardcover. I mean, print-on-demand, one at a time, with a dust jacket or just printed on the case, on the site. So it's amazing what you can do now. And then I have another pastor, Jeff Knight. I don't know if you know Joe and Linda Knight. They died in a plane crash coming up from Mexico. Okay, this is his son who took over their church. And he is a race car driver on Saturday nights and then preaches on Sunday mornings at the Rock Church in Monroe. So we're doing his book, but he's kind of doing a crowd, and I've got two other authors that are doing kind of a crowdfunding, Kickstarter, raising money that way. And really, when you're raising money on Kickstarter or places like that, crowdfunding sites, GoFundMe is one, Kickstarter, there's a bunch of them. But you can basically pre-sell. It's like using the pre-publication flyer, only it's on the internet. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to raise the money so that you can get the editing that you need, is my point, and the rest of the process. So crucial key is editing help, and I kind of went through this, so I'm just going to breeze through this. A ghostwriter is where you are not involved at all except for to tell your story and then to look at what they've written and approve it. Chuck Swindoll, that's what he has. He has ghostwriters. He doesn't write all his stuff. He preaches sermons, and they do it all. I mean, it's still his content, but he does none of the work. A co-writer or collaborative partner, you're involved, but the writer does the bulk of the work. And then coaching. That's where our coach leads you through the process of the rewrite. Or the write. I mean, either one. If you're starting from scratch. So here's my quick story on my Consumed by Success book. I had originally written that, not knowing. I'm a speaker, not a writer. So I'm like, okay, so I just wrote it like I would tell you across the table, well, then this happened, and then God showed me this, and then this happened, and da-da-da. That's passive writing is what that's called when you write like that. And so I didn't know to use dialogue and description and fiction techniques. You actually want to use that in nonfiction writing to make it more compelling. Well, I didn't know that. I was like, I got a story. I got to tell it. Well, so it was originally 100 pages. Inger Lodgelin, who was the one who helped the turnaround pastor guy, she and I knew each other personally. And so she just said, because she believed in my topic, because we were in a multi-level together, she helped me take it. And instead of like starting, you know, most people when they write their story, it's chronological. On a cold, windy night, I was born in a cabin, whatever, whatever. You know, you start there and then you tell this whole story. Well, she had me change it to start at this very compelling moment when I opened up an envelope and got a $25,000 check and looked over the water, the Mukilteo water and the mountains and, you know, in my picture, great big picture window house. And, you know, you start there and then, kind of flashback on things that led up to that. So it ended up being 200 pages, way better book. I learned so much from that process because I didn't know any of that stuff. But because I went through that coaching, I am a way better writer now. And so it served me well. It was totally worth it. But not everybody, I don't want to make anybody feel bad. If you're not that kind of person, you don't really, I just need my product, please, thank you very much. That's okay. Just want to say that. Okay, so here's the parts of the puzzle that you need if you're going to take a sermon and turn it into a book. You need an outline. A good outline of the sermon or the series or the speech or whatever we're talking about. You need audio files that are turned into a Word document of the transcription. Well, you can either have someone, you know, type it in, or you can, like Dragon, I'm sure Dragon will work for that.
Okay.
So you just play it, and it turns it into text. I know. It's awesome. Then you need to be thinking about added personal examples to keep it from being too preachy. And I'm saying that mostly for the pastors in the room, because sometimes, you know, you can preach a sermon and it can be preachy. It can get preachy, especially when it's in a book, when you don't tell, here's, you know, on this point, I really struggled with this. And I went through this time where God had to teach me this. And I wondered about, you know, and making yourself human and sharing your struggles. I mean, that if you don't do that and you just say, you need to know this, 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 and this, then it's too preachy. So that's just a little extra thing to think about. Anytime you can think of personal examples that you can use to prove your points that you're going to make, I want to start writing those down. Ideas for application questions or small group studies to be added to the content. Not saying you always have to do that, but that's worth thinking about. Be thinking about a title and a subtitle. And we'll help you. I mean, if you work with us, we will actually help you fine-tune that. Because sometimes people have titles that are way too long or subtitles that are way too long, and they need to be trimmed down. Thoughts about your purpose and your audience. Because a lot of times people don't really think through, who is this for? Who am I trying to reach? Who's going to get the most out of this message? And they just think, everyone needs to read my book. And let's face it, everyone ain't going to read your book. So let's try and get as narrow as we can so that you're going to be more effective that way. What benefits will you offer the reader? You need to think about, okay, why should they read this? Why should they spend their money on reading your book? What benefit, what's in it for them? I know that sounds selfish, but it is. People look at the back of the book, it's like, why should I buy this? Why should I spend my $10 or $15? So the answer to the question, why should I care, the reader, and why should I take my time to read your book? You need to answer those questions up front. Okay, so here's some tips, and these are tips from Neva Coyle, who is the one that's written. She's done a lot of ghostwrites and rewrites and co-writes with authors and pastors. Use the sermon outline for the bones, and then the transcript is what's going to put meat on the bones. Okay? In a sermon, voice inflections help deliver the message, but they don't in print. You miss that. You miss the body language. You miss the voice inflection. That's not going to show up on black on white paper. So that's a very important thing to realize. Okay, I got to be able to communicate those things, whether it's your humor or your, you know, your facial expressions, your gestures, whatever, got to think about those are going to have to be gotten into the text. Be ready to defend your points or desert them. And, you know, because you could be up on a stage and you can say something and somebody's not normally going to put his hand up and say, well, whoa, wait a second. What do you mean? I'm not so sure about that. But if it's in writing, you better be able to defend it. And if you can't, then leave it out. Okay? Whoever you work with will, if you've got someone who's going to be helping you co-write it or rewrite it, they need to be able to hear and read the sermon to capture the essence and the voice of the author, not just the words of the sermon. So it is important for that person who's doing that piece to hear your voice, to get, you know, to get that. And if they can see video and audio, that's even better. Yeah.
Will the coach, even if you're writing your own piece, will the coach actually listen to your sermons with you? Or
they could. Yep. That could be part of it. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So one thought was to get a volunteer to transcribe the sermon or invest in speech-to-text software, which is that dragon. Okay, so here's my tips from Inger, who's coming from the other aspect of let's just look at a different perspective and start the book from scratch and really brainstorm. So before you start, you need to realize the power of story. That is so powerful. Find a theme and stick with it. That's what they call a red thread. Well, see, and that may be, you know. Yeah, but see, if you may have lots of different things going on, but if you have one main message, God's faithfulness, whatever it is that you just tie in all the way through, but that's very important. We're on the back side of the handout, by the way. So, yeah. Okay, so ask yourself the question, does this fit? Or do I just like the sound of my own words?
Nice.
Yeah.
Reading out. Reading out loud helps too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You should always read it out loud. Because then when you start like tripping over your word, you go, okay, I got to rewrite that. But it's very important. That point is under find a theme and stick with it. Because you may have something else that's like, you just think it's so profound, it's just so good, but it doesn't go with the theme. You know, okay, use it somewhere else. Make yourself an outline and then just write. Edit later. Otherwise, you'll never get it done. Believe me. Include pertinent illustrations. And I always say you should be able to take every point you're making and use your own life experience to illustrate it. If you don't have something that happened to you, then maybe it was someone you ministered to, that you could tell their story without maybe their name. You know, I mean, you don't necessarily name names and all that, but you could tell the story of someone else's story that you worked with or that you know that illustrates your point. Best if it's not copied out of pulpit helps. Personal is powerful. And that's, so I know there's lots of things out there where you can just cut and paste and use stories, but it's always better if it's a personal story. Document and attribute as you go, where you got the clips and all the publishing info. So if you quote something from the internet, you need to make sure you keep that URL. I'm going to get into that right now. Be aware of the copyright law on fair use. So if you're quoting something out of a book or an article or a song to prove your point or to, you know, coincide with your point, if you're quoting from a book, no more than 350 words without having to get permission. So if it's over 350 words, you have to get permission. And we do that when we work with authors. We have a permission specialist who will go through, jumping through all the hoops to get that done for you. Yeah. But if you can keep it less than 350 words when it's from a book, you're fine. That's considered fair use. You just have to say where you got it from. If you can't make it sound like you wrote it, you got to say who it is and page number and publisher name and all that. If it's an article, 100 words. And if it's a song or poem, only the title. You cannot, yeah. And sometimes even the title is copyrighted. And not, you couldn't even use that without permission. So you have to be real careful with songs or poems. And I see that all the time. People that self-publish or they work with some of these self-publishers, and they quote full-on poems from famous people. It's like, you can't do, and with no permission given by, you know, none of that wording. Like,
except public domain?
Yes, okay. Public domain's fine. Yes. Absolutely. Public domain, you can do, like King James, you can do the whole thing.
Right.
You know, so anything with public domain is fine. But if it's copyrighted, okay, that's where you have those, kind of those limitations. Mm-hmm. Okay, document the Bible version that you use for each verse. Unless you're only using one or one predominantly, then it doesn't matter. But if you're using a bunch of different ones, every time you use the scripture, you want to put, you know, MSG or TLB or NIV or whatever, so that you can keep them all straight. And I think the norm, before you have to get permission for Bible text, it cannot be more than 25% of your total word count. So, you want to, if you're using more Bible than 25% of your word count, you're either going to have to get permission or use a public domain. And there are a few. King James is not the only one. NIV's, no.
Is that the word count one?
No, that's the, NIV, 25% of your total word count for your entire manuscript, that you can't use more than 25% of that word count from the NIV. You could from King James.
Okay.
You could from the Everyday. There's another one that is a little more contemporary that's a public domain.
ESV.
ESV, no, I don't think so. It's not ESV, but no problem. I'm just not thinking of it, but there is, if you Google public domain Bible translations, there is another one, and I'm not sure, I'm not thinking of the name, but it's not ESV. I do know that. They're a little more lenient than some of the others.
Yeah.
Consider endnotes instead of more distracting footnotes. Okay, because footnotes have to be on the page where the number is. Endnotes are just at the back, and they can refer back to it. Less distracting. And it's actually easier to work with. And, okay, we're going to wrap this up real quick. The steps, once it's written, I'm going to kind of run through those steps real quickly. And we do all of these through Redemption Press with authors. And I'm going to go into a little more detail tomorrow in my class. But we basically, the way we work is we only do what you need done. So if you have someone that can do a cover, great. We're not going to make you have us do your cover. But these are all the pieces that have to get done. Once it's written, it's going to need a copy edit. It's going to need a new set of eyes. And a copy edit is for grammar and punctuation. They're not changing the content. It's just for all the rules that you have to have for all your grammar and punctuation.
Do you have a rule breaker, grammar, punctuation, version? Like if you write like
A grammar Nazi?
So like if you are a writer who intentionally breaks the rules.
Oh, that's fine. As long as you're consistent.
Okay, good.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, yeah, and that's fine. It's just. But there are certain ones that are just kind of...
Right, like that was clearly a mistake.
Yeah. Okay, next one is a custom cover. And I'll probably go into more about covers tomorrow, but creating a cover that communicates is not as easy as you think. And sometimes authors want to put way too much on the cover and symbolize way too much and tell too much of the story on the cover. And that's not what the cover is for. Layout and formatting, that's creating the interior of the book, and it should match the front, you know, whatever the design and fonts are on the front cover. Proofreading, so that's after it's been laid out, it needs a proofread. And we have two different kinds. One is a word-for-word proofread or just a format proofread where it's been really worked over up front and proofed before it got typeset. Then it doesn't necessarily need to be a heavier proofread after it's typeset, just more looking for formatting issues that have cropped up during typesetting. Different bindings, you know, you think through, do you want hardcover, softcover, ebook? You know, you think about your options. And the great thing now is you no longer have to invest in a bunch of inventory. Unless you know you're going to get rid of a whole bunch of books quickly, then yes, it's cheaper to buy a large quantity, but it's a bigger investment. But if you know you can get rid of them and go through them, then we do that too. I mean, we do print on demand and the larger print runs. ISBN registration, that's International Standard Book Number. It will never sell through a bookstore if you don't have one. And not that I am a big promoter of bookstores, because if you haven't noticed lately, a lot of them are going out of business, and they take a big cut. So it's always better if you can go straight to the buyer. But you do want to have an ISBN number. It needs to be copywritten in your name and the Library of Congress control number. Those are all things we do. Or we let you do. You know, I mean, we got both ways. And then it needs to be available through all the distribution channels, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, ChristianBook.com, through a bookstore, through a secular bookstore, through a library. That's important that it's available through all the different resellers as possible. Okay, so where to go from here? There's certainly lots of options today, and it's overwhelming if you type in Christian publishing. Anyone can get published, which is a sad thing, I think, because there's no filter there. No one requires a filter. We will not publish anything that hasn't been edited. So we're a little different as far as that goes. The workshop tomorrow I'm going to do is going to pretty much point out the snakes in the jungle, because it's gotten pretty bad. There's a lot of people taking advantage of Christian authors, calling themselves Christian publishers, and they're not. And so I am going to go through all of that tomorrow. The other thing is we are going to do a drawing for an hour after this class today, an hour after the class tomorrow, for 1 free hour of coaching on how to present your message in ministry, and it'll be with me. So I'm like, God always gives me these great marketing ideas. So that's all I had. Does anybody have any questions? Because I think we're a little few minutes over when I was supposed to be done. Yay! Well, I've got some cards up here, and we're giving away a whole basket of books. Those are people that I didn't interview on my radio show, but people sent me all these books. So we're giving away a bunch of books, and then we're also giving away, the $200 value coaching option. So our booth is upstairs, N28. Uh-huh. So come on up to the booth if you can, and if you can come back tomorrow to the class. I think it's in blue, but it's not this room. Yes. Yeah. Thank you all for coming. Yeah.
Very good. I am.